Hello, friends. It's your Chapo for the week. We've got a full deck, no guests, but everyone is sitting in on this episode. Let's sound off. It's me, Will Meneker.
It's me, Felix Biederman. When you're here, you're family.
Oh, hello. Hello. How are you? It's Virgil.
It's your boy, Matt Chrisman.
Hey, it's Amber.
Amber, we need to work on your catchphrase.
Okay? Sorry. All right, I'm very tired.
That could be good.
It's too warm. It's too warm. Global warming is making me sluggish and a bit damp.
That's a great catchphrase.
Yeah. I'm a little damp.
Yeah, I got to say that.
Yo, kids, it's Amber. I'm very tired and global warming is making me damp and dizzy.
Yeah, this new thing where my beloved October, which was crisp air and eddies of dead leaves skittering across pavement, is now just sweaty asshole August all over again. It's good to me. I love it.
Tit sweat season extended well into what was supposed to be our autumnal bliss.
I feel very much cheated, but the one recompense is all the guys at Halloween parties and going out to clubs sweating through their Joker makeup because it's going to be 85 degrees. And they're going to look like Lauren in the Hills with all the stuff falling off their face.
I was going to say the damage that they wrote in creepy old English style font across their forehead just melts into their face. And it looks like just says doo-doo now.
Yeah. That's for fake Joker fans. Real Joker fans know Joker's summer outfit is now extended into the October months. Joker's tank top, it's classic green or white, depending on if it's Heath Ledger or PUA Joker. The Joker apple picking mission. Joker William Sonoma expedition. Those are the fall Joker activities, but the summer Joker activities like Lollapalooza Joker require the summer outfit, or perhaps the little short and sailor outfit Joker outfit, or the nurse Joker outfit. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Fall Joker mission is burning all of California's wine country.
Yeah. Some men just want to watch the vines burn. Joker destroyed Vine. He's like, do you want to know why I don't want POC to make entertaining videos?
I'm looking forward to being the world's first Joker in mesh basketball shorts.
So I want to begin this week's show by first of all giving Street Fight Boys Brett and Brian, who we were lucky enough to share a stage with this weekend in their New York City debut. It was a pleasure to host Brett and Brian and Nick here in New York City, and by host them I mean actually have them sleep on my couch because they got kicked out of their hotel room for vaping.
Classic
street fight move.
That's some real street fight hours.
Yep.
Vaping is not a crime. There's no smoke involved. It's a vapor.
Well, yeah, no, and they got hit with this huge room fee for like cigarettes, for
what?
Extra cleaning for cigarette smoke.
It's vapor.
Well, they tried to explain
what
that.
What did Stephen Dorff tell us? It's vapor, not tobacco smoke. What the fuck, people?
Well,
it's the 21st century.
There is no justice in this world.
The Tree of Liberty often has to be refreshed by the huge clouds of patriots.
Breathing cotton. So anyway, love to Brett and Brian. The live show that we did with them, there will be a video available of that shortly, if you're interested. I thought it was one of our best live shows ever.
I thought it went very well.
It was one of the best.
I'm really looking forward to seeing it on video.
Go to black.com if you want to see that video.
If you want to see how big my sweat stains can get, watch that video.
I don't know anyone who doesn't want to see that.
Actually, I wasn't sweating that much on Friday.
Yeah, actually, no. I think
the dew point had dropped enough that I wasn't a disgusting mess for once.
Nothing will ever beat you at the Philly show.
Yeah, no, that's the sweatiest I've ever been.
Moving on to the show, Virgil, are you watching football on your phone right now?
Yeah.
Come on, buddy.
What?
Be professional.
Get your head in the game.
I can do two things at the same time.
We'll see
the Jets play the Dolphins. Very low energy game. It requires very little mental capacity to follow this.
We'll see how your riffs do on the show.
All right, let's see it.
You're not allowed to watch football outside of the show if your riffs are below a B-minus quality.
Were you not aware that this was one of your examination weeks where you're being observed? And then we are all going to be submitting our evaluations of you after this.
I didn't know we had an evaluation process.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes.
No, we absolutely do. Yeah. And then this weekend is yours, so you're not...
Three bad evals and you're gone.
Yeah, this is not a good start.
So to begin the show, other by aside from evaluating Virgil's quite poor conduct, so like there's this new movie out right now directed by Noah Baumbach and starring Adam Sandler and Dustin Hoffman that's gotten a lot of really good reviews. I've heard very good things about it. You know, Noah Baumbach has made some good movies in the past. I've been a fan. But we were going to watch that, but we ended up watching another movie that I just want to briefly share with you guys that also...
I mean, it's another movie that has...
Starred Dustin Hoffman and Adam Sandler.
As in the same roles as father and son.
As father and son.
We got confused. Like, they've got to make these descriptions more clear, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we picked the better one. I think we picked the more interesting film.
I'm speaking, of course, about a little movie called The Cobbler.
Yep.
And we did this one on Matt's recommendation because he had seen it before. And this is sort of a spiritual sequel to our Reign Over Me episode.
Yeah.
You know, check the back catalog for that one. It's a movie about where Adam Sandler plays a widower whose wife and kids died on 9/11.
Yeah.
It was heartfelt. It was a very moving performance. But he came back with a film called The Cobbler. That is one of the more inexplicable movies I think I've ever seen.
What's so funny is it's directed by Tom McCarthy, who a year later made the Oscar-winning film Spotlight.
He won an Oscar a year after he made this movie, which was one of the worst-reviewed movies of all time.
Yeah, it's really inexplicable because you look at his other films, he makes these very tasteful middle-brow dramas, and then he made this just insane mental breakdown on film. And you just wonder what the hell was happening to Tom McCarthy in 2014 to make this happen.
I think that I've discovered the meaning of The Cobbler in the way that I discovered the meaning of Reign Over Me. And we discovered the meaning of Batman versus Superman. But we should explain the film first.
I think I just briefly explained the plot. Adam Sandler plays a cobbler. His father is a cobbler. His father's father was a cobbler. And they have a small... cobble shop.
A cobble shop?
Cobblery.
On the Lower East Side. It's like, you know, it's like...
It's going a boutique back to, cobbling experience.
Going back to like, you know, like it's like a Jewish tradition, Jewish family of cobblers, right? And he's sort of this sad sack character that still lives at home with his mom. It's not explicitly stated, but like you might as well say, never smashed.
No. He's incel all the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Remember, put a flag in that. Incel all the way.
And, you know, he's trying to keep the cobbling business afloat until one day Method Man comes in his store with a pair of gaiters and is like, fuck you, a bitch. Like, you're going to clean these shoes.
Yeah.
I need them by tonight.
And then, I don't want to get pulled out of my car in this neighborhood.
I mean, I don't want to, like, it just getting into it, basically, Adam Sandler goes...
He's got a magical cobbling machine.
He goes to the basement of the cobble shop and finds a magic shoe stitching machine that when you use it on someone else's pair of shoes and then put those shoes on, you become that person or like an identical copy of that person. Yeah. You look exactly like that person.
They're still around, okay. But you also look like them.
Okay. So just to make everyone aware, I did not see the movie. How did he find the...
Because his original, like the newer cobble machine,
he had an electric one that he used, but it broke, so he had to go in the basement where his grandfather's grandfather or whatever had left this antique push pedal one, and because he didn't have any other one in the shop, he had to use it, and then he used it, and then while he was waiting for Method Man, he just decided to put the shoes on, and then looked in the mirror and he became Method Man. And it's the whole movie is based on someone's heard the stupid cliche, you've got to walk a mile in the man's shoes, and thought, blockbuster hit. That's the premise.
It's just that makes that literal.
It takes a stupid cliche phrase and turns it into a literal excuse for hijinks.
But walk a mile in someone's shoes in the cobbler universe means that Adam Sandler commits crimes. But
yes.
Only while wearing the shoes of black people.
That needs to be pointed out. He has all these shoes from all these different people, and when he realizes what the machine can do, he puts all of them through the stitcher and then puts them on, and he has this like very low energy montage of trying out different identities. The first thing he does is walk around Chinatown as a Chinese person.
He does
Tai
Chi
in the park. Which
sort of
implies that that was his dream in life, was to be Chinese.
You could be anything. You could be anyone for a day. You'd be an unremarkable Chinese man.
It's just like this middle-aged Chinese guy, and he's just walking down Canal Street, giggling with he's absolutely rapturous.
You got to get the full Chinatown experience of still not speaking the language because the shoes don't give you linguistic ability.
Well, that's the funny thing is that he has an accent. He speaks English with an accent when he's wearing the shoes. But then he decides to get more into it. And, for example, his first big crime is he dines and dashes by bringing shoes into a fancy restaurant, dining, going into the men's room, changing shoes, and then walking out. Even though dining and dashing is the easiest crime in the world to commit, and you don't need magical shoes to do it. But the thing that's important is that he chooses the shoes of a black guy to do it.
He then steals a guy's car
by stealing
also
his shoes first.
As Method Man.
Yeah, he goes up to a guy as Method Man and jacks his shoes on his front porch. And then he goes off to do a bunch of other crimes. And every time he does a crime, he wears a black person's shoes. It's universal.
No one did a woke audit of this screenplay before it actually got made into a movie.
It's kind of amazing.
Or actually, no one read the screenplay in general before it got made into a movie.
I think it is woke because it's saying, you know, FBI crime statistics are imbalanced because of magical cobblers.
Breitbart magic shoes section.
But so it's got, that's very problematic. But then the woke part is that it's anti-gentrification.
Yeah.
uses, it's the ultimate racist but woke movie.
Yeah, it really is. Because he uses the shoes to stop evil Ellen Barkin, who is a slumlord, from foreclosing on someone's house in an incredibly convoluted and incredibly boring caper. But it really, it's like, who cares? This is boring until we get to the twist at the end.
Okay, before we get to the twist at the end, it needs to be said that one of the things he does with his shoes is he puts on his father's pair of shoes and appears as his father.
His father had abandoned the family.
Had like, you know, gone out for cigarettes or whatever. His father, played by Dustin Hoffman.
Yes.
He puts on his shoes and he becomes Dustin Hoffman. And what he does with it is have dinner with his mother, who hasn't seen this guy in like 20 years, and have like a moment of reconciliation between them. And then she dies.
The next morning.
So what he does is he uses his father's shoes to kill his mother in the kindest way possible.
Yeah. Yes.
Other, just short of holding a pillow over her face.
This is like a fascinating thing, too, because he thinks he's doing a kindness, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So
and
basically,
like,
in his mind,
happy.
The only event in this woman's life was a man walking out on her. That's cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's good. And it works because then she's happy enough.
She's
that
like,
she
I can go now. Now exactly. Now that I, you know, have reconciled that I've been wronged by this man, the dominating event of my entire life as a person who theoretically had a series of events that happened and raised a child at the very least. Nope, it's all about the man. But now I can crawl onto the ice floe and just drift off to sea.
But it's also like his. So she asks him like why he disappeared, which. Even though we meet that character later on, he offers an explanation. The audience still doesn't know. But what explanation would like the 35-year-old incel like shoe cuck give about like love and responsibility and loss? Like what is he going to say? I had to go. And she's like, oh, that's okay. I can die now.
Yeah, that was enough for her.
So. There's really like no forward momentum to the plot in this movie at all. Adam Sandler is like more comatose than usual. Usually he plays like in Rain Over Me, he was an incredibly volatile, mentally handicapped person. And in this one, he's just sort of a depressed person.
He's basically very
low energy.
It's like that character got a Thorazine prescription.
Mm-hmm. So basically, this all leads to he stops a building.
From being foreclosed upon
with his magical shoe power. Yeah. Also, if you put on the shoes of a dead person, you appear as a zombie.
Yes.
That's another little little avenue in this movie that gets explored.
Yeah.
I'm very upset.
You're about to be more upset when you get to the end of this movie.
Yeah,
Sandler,
he murders Method Man with a stiletto heel
yes.
in some way that makes very little sense.
And oh, the stiletto heel of a trans woman too. That's another problematic part of this movie. Yeah.
The movie is rife with problematic presentation.
And it's what the movie's about is it's really about identity.
Yeah.
But no.
So Sandler turns himself into the police, but he's completely unable to communicate with them because he's a gibbering idiot. Then he brings them to the room where the dead body and the blood is, and it's totally clean.
And it turns out that he was being helped the whole time by Steve Buscemi, who plays his next door neighbor. He owns a barbershop, and he's very, very into him. He's incredibly close. Like, he's always popping up and asking what he's doing. He's very into his life to a point that's kind of suspicious. And then you find out why. And it's because Steve Buscemi is not Steve Buscemi. Steve Buscemi is Dustin Hoffman wearing Steve Buscemi's shoes. He never left. He had to leave because he was fighting crime in the shoes, and criminals were coming after him. So he had to permanently wear Steve Buscemi's shoes and basically hide in plain sight as Steve Buscemi.
It's his footwear relocation program.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. But that's not even the best twist.
Nope.
Like, it turns out that, yeah, Steve Buscemi is actually Dustin Hoffman, who's Adam Sandler's dad, and has been helping him from afar, you know, and never once said, hey, check out the magical item.
Nope, never once.
Yeah. He let him discover that on his own.
After 25 years or whatever.
Also, they just, like, keep it in the basement. Yes. You wouldn't, like, you know, get some really secure storage for that.
Nope. He was like, I've lived 40 years of my life, or, like, X amount of time since you left, at least two decades, as, like, a miserable, miserable person. Yeah. Wondering.
And presumably, if his electric stitcher had not broken, he never would have met his father again.
Right.
So yeah, also, his father theoretically could have checked in.
Yes.
On the wife and the kid and been like, I'm so sorry, you know, whatever, I'm dying of cancer, I don't want you to see me. Like, it did something merciful.
No, well,
he did something merciful, which was be Steve Buscemi.
Yeah. I mean, he tried.
That is the opposite of mercy. No one wants Steve Buscemi hovering over
wrong,
them.
Wrong.
I have to disagree with you on that. I mean, the explanation he does give is one of, it's like, you know, God revealing his face to you and it deforming and almost killing you. Moses being the only one who could withstand that. My life hasn't been the same since the garbled explanation the screenwriters got. But when we go into his dad's, the basement of his dad's barbershop, there are all the shoes, and the shoes are used to, like, apparently passed down from Steve Buscemi / Dustin Hoffman's dad.
Which presumably means they turn you into a skeleton if you'd wear them, because they're all old.
I also feel like there's a weird, like, convoluted, like, Holocaust metaphor in here on account
of
the
all
shoe
those shoes.
Yeah.
Shoes.
That's the thing. They always had this ability. How did they not stop the Holocaust?
That's
they could
point.
Have just put on Hitler's shoes.
Yeah, and say, we're calling it off, folks.
Well, they would have put on Hitler's shoes, walked a mile in his shoes.
And like,
realized,
oh, he's right.
You know, yeah.
Well, how are we going to take care
now.
Of the Jewish problem?
But it turns out that the cobblers are basically superheroes. And that all of these, like, small business owners have superpowers. And that dry cleaners and cobblers and barbers all have these enchanted objects that are passed down from generation to generation, and they're used to fight crime and stop evictions.
Except when they're used to cause crime.
Except when they're used to murder people and steal fancy dinners, yes.
So, in the cobbler universe, yeah, I'm really excited for the sequels, finding out what the powers of bodega shop owners, of, like, movers are, and
bootleg DVD salesman. Yeah.
Guys who ask you if you like rap music. I will be leaving the show to contribute to the Cobbler Wiki project.
The fact that we didn't get a Cobbler extended universe is truly a tragedy.
Well, I mean, like,
Donald Trump fixed
this. Bodega shapeshifters. They can become cats.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Falafel guys, like halal cart guys, can speak any language, and movers can breathe underwater. I don't know why. It's not useful. It's just a weird thing.
They have gills.
Yeah, yeah. They are. All, every mover is Aquaman. All women are beautiful. All men are swole. All movers are Aquaman.
And so the very end of the movie is Dustin Hoffman takes him into the sub-level of his fucking barbershop, where there is a limousine.
It's like the Batcave.
Yeah, it's like a Batcave, and there's a limousine and like some sort of Alfred-esque footman who leads them into this car that they then drive off into the city, presumably to fight more crime in people's shoes.
But what the shit is going on with Method Man?
He's dead.
Oh, he's dead.
He killed him.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
he died.
Yeah. Wait, oh, wait, with the shoe?
Yeah, yes.
Murdered. Yeah, yeah.
Why did he kill him?
Because he was trying to steal his
he was
watch collection.
To steal his watches.
And then there's a humorous scene where like Method Man opens the door and looks at Method Man and then immediately attacks his exact duplicate.
Yeah.
Which is,
that's
I
about
think
black
is
black
like
crime.
A bird in the mirror.
Yeah.
That was a metaphor for black and black crime.
I think we decided, at first that was kind of funny, but I think we decided that if you ever did open a door and on the other side of it was someone who looked exactly like you, your only choice is to try to kill them.
Strangle
them. No.
There are other
it's
options.
Looking like a snack. It's we're 69 each other.
No. Yeah. I don't know. No,
I'm never dating again.
No. If it's your clone, time travel duplicate, or just twin you never know you had, you can either kill immediately.
Kill immediately. That's the only
no,
option.
That's safe. I'm trying to warn you.
Or... like I said, mutual masturbation.
No, not an option.
They're trying to warn you about the future.
All right, give him like 1 second and then kill
them. No.
Not even 1 second.
What if I have to get a nut off? They can tell me after.
By the way, this idea that you want to jerk off with them is so stupid. Do you ever masturbate in the mirror? It's a fucking life-changingly traumatic experience.
No. Speak for yourself,
dude.
Yeah,
speak for yourself, buddy.
I'm looking real good.
No, you got to strangle them right away. Too dangerous
now,
to leave
third
alive.
Third option. Do like capers and pranks and heists.
Oh yeah,
there can be only one.
Yeah,
no, the Highlander.
No.
Not
you know no, there are no. actual identical twins that walk around. Yeah. And they're fine.
Well, that's what you think.
Matt's getting rid of all of them.
It's all insidious.
I don't trust like twins.
Matt Mengele over here.
I'm not gonna lie. I don't trust him. I think there's some sort of dark magic involved.
This is the third episode of the Matt Crispin solo project. I'm sewing twins together this time.
Yeah, you could do classic hijinks like it's your wife's birthday and she wants to go to dinner, but you want to go bowling with your friends, so you pull a good switcheroo. But what's going to happen is your clone or future you or whatever is going to grow resentful of all the privileges that you have.
It's
going to conspire against you.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. I think in, like as good socialist praxis, you would have to share the boring parts of your relationship.
Well, then what's the point then?
Well, it means you get twice as much free time as well. But just like you do half of the boring stuff and, you know, trade off two.
Someone's
going to
murder
the
other one eventually.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So just
an inevitability. There will be a conflict.
Maybe this works for you, Will, because both you and your double would be just credulous and nice to each other.
Whereas your double, you would
immediately duplicitous. Yeah. I don't even think I could kill my double. I think he'd get the jump on me by half a second.
I don't know. Why work against each other when you can cooperate? I think I could use, as a professional communicator, I could use the power of my words to make my
clone my
friend.
I feel like I'd
have,
like, you know, a designated driver sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think we could make it work.
You, though, Felix, would get incredibly frustrated if you played Battlefield against your clone or...
No, I wouldn't. I would win.
Double because you would be in a stalemate and you'd never be able to win.
No, I would win. I'm the better one.
No. That's not how... God damn it. You guys are not understanding the concept of an exact double.
You're not understanding the concept of a truly perfect man. But... So what I initially thought, you know... It is true. The story of this movie is the story of every Jewish family. We all can do this. We all have a basement full of shoes that we jack
magic
off in
objects.
To like become black or whatever.
See, I just thought it was a bunch of gold.
No, it's actually not. The gold is a metaphor for other people's experiences. That's their true riches in life.
See, this is why they're a literary people.
Yes.
Yeah. But actually, it's about something different. It's about fake posting.
Okay, go on.
Fake posting, for those of you who don't know, most Reddit posts that people post on Twitter that are like, I'm 32, my girlfriend's 87, and she...
my boyfriend won't stop listening to this podcast.
Yeah,
it's ruining our
relationship.
Those
are all fake posts, and they're very funny. And they fool people who haven't spent enough time on the right internet. But it's a tradition that was passed down. And like all literary traditions, it was invented by Jews. My dad before me was a fake poster. My grandfather, fake poster. They changed their name from one Jewish name to another Jewish name when they got to America. It didn't even help them. They just thought it was funny. And when you go into the... Where do most people have their computers? The basement.
That's not
I don't know
true
if most
all.
People would say that.
Yeah.
But
fake posters do,
true.
Though.
Okay,
fake posters
right.
do. And the car... The car symbolizes the next frontier of media, podcasts.
Ah.
This is the story of the Jewish experience in America, of on purpose saying things that aren't true, creating disturbing scenarios, just, you know, walking a mile in other people's shoes. What if I pretended to, you know, have this relationship where I'm giving half my income to a podcast? What if I, you know, as I've done many times, pretended to be soldiers on internet forums to win arguments? What if I did that? How would I change the world for a better? And who's to say that I haven't?
And it's true. The first Jewish fake post was the Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. And there are fake posts all over the Old Testament. Maccabees didn't happen. Maccabees, because these characters are taken out of the original Hebrew, they're actually saying, me, 27, I am a guerrilla soldier in occupied Israel. Here's what I hide and I kill Greek soldiers. And it, people made a big reaction, but they were like, ha, gotcha. I didn't do anything. But yeah, Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs, that didn't happen. King Solomon didn't fuck that woman, but he was doing an Our Relationships post.
Yeah,
this is
yeah,
the
yeah.
story of our people.
I mean, that's some of the early kind of fake porn posts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was like 50 Shades of Grey.
The famous story about Solomon and the two women claiming the same baby and his brilliant solution to cut the baby in half.
Fake
like,
post.
Like, no, but if you did that on like Reddit or Imgur, like those people would be like, that's a great solution. Cut the baby in half. They wouldn't get the import of that story.
What I'm getting from this is that the Jews are not to be trusted.
No, not at all. Not at all. We invented literature and we keep doing it. That's my point.
But literature is just another word for lying.
Yes. That's what it means in French.
Song of Solomon reads like one of those PUA guys that's like, yeah, I ran 50 routines at the mall yesterday. Bag 10 HB 9s and an HB 6.
He rubbed the Queen of Sheba's elbow.
Bitches love that.
Yeah. He said, yeah, I guess Sheba's all right.
Like an 8 tops.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is always lie. That's the takeaway from The Cobbler and the takeaway from my life.
I'm glad I didn't see this movie.
And it's also the perfect segue to our next news item, which combines two of our favorite topics, lying and stealing valor.
Yes.
Felix, which is the most noble kind of lie.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because I have thought about this for a while. Is stealing valor the most anti-imperialist thing you can do? Yes. Because our culture of military worship, we have to dilute the value of the military.
It's true because...
Counter-propaganda.
It's,
yes.
Well, counterfeiting. That counterfeiting is often used as a weapon of war to destabilize another country's mm-hmm. currency.
Dr. Mabuza did it.
Yeah, and if our currency is valor, if you dilute it, then there's no point.
Thank you.
I'm not going to go fight and die in Afghanistan if anybody can get 10% off a Golden Corral by just showing up and saying that they're a troop.
Yes. Yes.
This week's Stolen Valor story comes courtesy of a pro-Trump Navy SEAL war hero who was featured on Fox. Interestingly enough, he was featured because he's also an artist and he does like glass blowing and stuff. And he made an official presidential seal in glass that he like sent to the White House to like personally give to his hero, Donald Trump. And then, you know, like Stolen Valor Icarus flew too close to the sun by appearing on Fox News. And I just want to see here. His name is John Garofalo. He's 72 and he was featured on a Fox News show by like one of their sort of like B-list guys named Brian Lanis. And he claimed to have served 7 years as a Navy SEAL, received 22 commendations, including 2 Purple Hearts, also claimed to have been listed as missing in action twice during Vietnam. And he said, he personally carved a presidential seal to give to President Trump. And he was described as a tough, tough man by the Fox News host. But then, like, as soon as the story broke, the Navy Times reached out to him about his service, and then he confessed immediately to lying about it. And he says, what I did, I'm ashamed of, and I didn't mean to cause so much disgrace to the SEALs. So he just wanted to carve a presidential seal, give it to the president, and pretend to have been Chuck Norris, but it all comes crashing down.
Let me just say, first of all, I am very shocked and unsure what to believe now that I know that a glass blowing artist is dishonest.
I'm starting to
think
that
was the last field that I had any faith in. Yeah.
I'm starting to think that kid who mowed the White House lawn wasn't actually part of SEAL Team 6.
I'm legitimately fascinated by all the Stolen Valor people because I think the motivation for it is this very kind of like culturally specific sort of fetish and insecurity. I think it's like the male equivalent to like faking a pregnancy. Because you get like a certain type of reverence and praise that suddenly makes you feel important and meaningful in a way beyond like an actual accomplishment would.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, no one knows if you were a good soldier or not. Like,
yeah,
you could have very
true.
Well just like lived through something and they give you a medal.
How do women fake being pregnant?
Oh.
So I mean, I can imagine like you could get like a fake stomach or whatever, but like there's
like
a deadline
to
this prank, you know? Like,
oh yeah, well, like most lies, it catches up with them.
Well, you have 9 months to steal an infant if you really want to commit.
People
to
People who do this kind of thing, they're not thinking too far ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, this
true.
Asshole was like, yeah, I'll go on Fox News and give people my name.
No one will check on this. There
fucking
aren't people completely obsessed with like verifying people's military records constantly on the watch.
Right.
Exactly. And it's always Navy SEALs. They always go for that one.
Exactly.
Yeah,
like,
they're the
why
top. They're the alphas.
Yeah. You know, like you got to come up with a more believable lie. I think we should do like the counterpart to the people who like go out and expose valor theft frauds. I think we should like start like a business that just helps facilitate people's valor theft where we sell packages of like, this is the lingo you need to know.
Yes.
Like, here's some medals.
We should start sowing disbelief about actual veterans and be like, that person is stealing valor.
Oh my God. John McCain.
Yeah.
Never
happened.
Never happened.
I'm a John McCain truther. Never
yes.
happened.
That guy, he was in a literal Hilton, not the halfway Hilton.
just another balloon boy.
Yeah. I got to say, though, the thing that's most annoying is from this whole thing, more than the valor theft or whatever, is these fucking assholes are so obsessed with how America is turning into this nation of crybaby infants. And yet all of them, their greatest desire is to have the president put their finger painting on the refrigerator in the White House. Yeah. I made you a SEAL, President Trump. Who fucking cares? Shut the fuck up.
Wall being like, I'm an army man.
I'm an army man.
Pew, pew.
And lying about it. The three favorite things of children, being a badass hero, making art that your dad likes, and lying.
Yeah. Grow up. That's what I say. Yeah.
Another good one. Someone who also greatly admires John McCain, and I don't know if he's like a. I think this guy counts as a valor thief. I'm talking about Eric Garland.
Oh yeah.
I think he counts as a valor thief.
Nah,
because
he's an intelligence. That's
he pretends to be like a fucking spy. Like he pretends like he has like
he works
access
the,
to like
he
fucking
works for the Twitter spy agency. He's an intelligence dude. He's the same as a veteran.
He pretends to be like. Like he has access to like special knowledge or like
yeah.
Like
he does. He has
he can analyze data and shit. And
yeah,
like
he has LinkedIn Premium. You get all of that. You pay 30 a month.
I just want to bring him up because it reminded me that he did a thing yesterday. Is one of the, like he just continues to be awesome. Like he continues to just up the bar.
I can't even remember a time. I remember being mad at him for some reason once when he first popped up, and now I can't even comprehend that. He's just fucking rules. He's
the only
so
thing I'm
funny.
Mad at is that he kicked us off his Patreon.
Yeah, he did.
I wanted
that.
To be on that fucking conference call with him. But let's be honest, he never would have done
never,
that anyway.
Never.
For the people who legitimately, well, we legitimately subscribe to him.
We probably
just
wanted to hear that
him,
podcast
yeah,
more than anyone.
Yeah. He did a thing yesterday where he goes, it's Friday night, and you know, from here on out, the combination of vodka, ginger beer, and mint will be called the democracy donkey. Fuck you, Vlad. So he's doing the freedom fries with the Moscow Mule, which, by the way, it's lime juice, not mint. But then someone found out that the picture that
the cocktail nerd here.
Yeah, the cocktail nerd. The picture that he posted of, like, you know, the nice copper mug, the crushed ice, you know, nice looking Moscow Mule. Was just a Google image. It was
image,
the first
yeah,
result
yeah.
for Moscow Mule.
Not even trying.
So how... He wasn't even drinking alone.
Are you? Are you
like
now criticizing?
He was posting alone.
He was fake drinking alone.
Are you now criticizing Eric Garland for not abusing alcohol?
Yes.
Make up your mind.
My favorite thing that he does has to be when a bunch of people are making fun of him for some dumb thing he said, and he just posts these totally nonsensical charts that he devised in some way and says, got all of your IP addresses connecting the nodes. Thanks for the compromat, comrades.
He fucking kicks ass. And by the way, what if he's right?
Well, then we'll all look the fool.
Exactly.
Can we watch his Amazon author video?
Yes, we can.
Amber, have you seen this?
Absolutely.
No, I didn't know they had a video.
Okay, well, this is...
Gather around, everybody.
Teaching things to Amber, describing movies to Amber. Hold on a second. Let's...
I've been
tutorial mission.
Yeah.
All right, this is on his...
This is a mansplain episode.
The future should not be the subject of a motivational speech.
Oh. Oh, he moves too much. Oh.
Eric, stop moving your upper lip so much.
He is very animated. This is an animated man.
He's dynamic.
He's on the Adderall, baby.
Sir, stand down.
He has really large hands. Look how large his hands are.
He clearly shops at the Dan Harmon collection.
10-inch player, Eric Garland.
The gamut. The gamut from school kids to countries.
Unlike those dropout kids.
Wait a minute.
We work with babies.
Also, where do kids live? School kids generally live in countries, so that sounds... That's redundant.
The D.C. area.
Yeah, they're growing fucks.
Oh! Oh, he pulled... Oh.
I just want to pause there to say that, like, he's...
Look at his giant hand.
He's like, in a white background, hacking. But, like, the coolest part about this video about the future is that he's doing the Minority Report thing where he's, like, bringing stuff up with his hands, pushing them away, bringing it back.
Yep. And he does have large hands, but you know what they say? Big hands, big insight into Russian infeddling in American elections.
Wait, what was the thing called again?
What?
The cocktail that he renamed?
Moscow Mule.
But no, he renamed it.
The Democracy Donkey. Democracy Donkey.
How about this? Democracy Donkey Punch. Oh!
That's what Russia did to America.
Sir Vladimir Putin, sir, you gave a Cleveland steamer to the Constitution. Vladimir Putin is chili dogging Donald Trump, and Donald Trump loves it. Sir, 1 out of 430.
Moving along now from Eric Garland, our boy and friend. I guess another thing that was going on in the news this week, we talked about it last time. Richard Spencer did another one of his little pep talks at a university to the universal acclaim of about a dozen people, from what I could tell. But then after it, there was another neo-Nazi like shooting where like these guys just like shot a gun at a crowd of counter protesters.
Yeah.
That story is of note because one of the guys, one of the three people who was arrested for it, was the guy from that video. We've talked about it on the show before. He was one of the guys from the video that was like a couple months ago at one of those like statue protests where they were like, we must protect Nathan Bedford Forrest. Yeah. They're trying to drag Nathan.
Yeah. this was the fake protest. They thought Antifa was going to be protesting then, but that turned out to be bullshit. So a bunch of these people just went to the park and ambled around with assault weapons.
Well, these were like the Oath Keeper, like 3%er, like militia type people were like, you know the type, like big fucking suburb, like, you know, like crew cut, like hot dog pack neck, Oakleys, kitted out with like all the survival vests.
They had a lot of pockets on their pants. A
lot of pockets.
Big on pockets.
Yeah, a lot of keychains and shit and the guns, of course. Yeah. So like they had showed up to protect the statue, but like also it was sort of this clash of cultures because like these alt-right guys showed up and then one of them, and famously in this video, was sort of like laying at the base of the statue, these like hand-drawn signs featuring Pepe and like angry feels guy. Yeah.
Just, no, I'm sorry. Like, he just completely cocked a cheek and farted at me.
Oh, Matt.
I didn't move.
You cocked a cheek.
No, I did not.
Or then your fart was so powerful you got an inch off the couch.
I didn't. I sat here exactly the same way. I haven't moved at all.
Swear to God.
Amber, you got to stop owning Matt on the show. Yeah.
No, he's getting me back, clearly, right now.
Yeah, he put down a bunch of posters of Pepe and shit.
And then, like,
and these guys who do not
the
go
noble
online to do
Western
that,
tradition yeah. of Pepe.
They yeah, were no, like, fuck
the,
you,
the 3%
get out of
guys were like, get this fag shit out of here. This isn't Comic-Con. And then, like, he, like, exasperated, like, was just like, come on, guys, they're good memes. They're good memes, guys.
And he said, I thought I was going to make friends. You know,
adult friend finder.
So they basically put him in a headlock and shoved him the fuck out of there.
Yeah. And I guess he felt like he needed to make it up and show how real and hard he was by being party to an attempted murder now.
He shot at a crowd of people and then missed and hit the side of a building.
I don't know if he shot.
I think it was him.
The guys you're with, one of them had priors or whatever.
I think he was the guy with priors.
Really?
I believe so, yeah.
Was he?
I think so. I gotta double check this, but I believe he was the one
well,
with
let's
priors
just keep talking
was,
and not check it at all. You're listening to a podcast, okay? There are farts and we're not serious journalists right now.
One of these articles quoted him as saying he was radicalized in prison when he saw how poorly white inmates were treated. So his big issue was reverse racism in prisons.
Yeah, no, it's a problem. Every Wednesday for TV time, they put on Soul Food. They never put on Beaches, not once.
One of the Black Gorilla Family guys called me Mayo Boy, and I haven't gotten over it.
But I think this guy, he didn't do so well with the Oath Keepers, but I think he's going to do really well with the Aryan Brotherhood in jail. Because he's going to be the only guy who can use a straightened bed spring and a Bic lighter to make Pepe tattoos.
Oh, how sick is it going to be when they send each other kites that are just posts?
Yeah.
you get something under your door and it's like, Saturday feels. What the fuck is this? What the fuck are Saturday feels? You're getting shit for using those little pointy signs to denote action.
So, shout out to that guy, you know. Again, owning the snowflakes by being sentenced to 5 to 10 years in federal prison.
Classic own.
Shout out them. Back to the military. They're in the news this week because we alluded to it briefly before, but like this continues to be a thing with Trump and this phone call to the mother of one of the soldiers who were killed in Niger earlier this week. And again, like the question, people were like, why were they there in the first place? And at a press conference, General Kelly said it was to teach them human rights.
Yes.
Apparently.
To spread human rights to West Africa.
But like there's this whole weird thing now where like General Kelly has become like the de facto president.
Yeah. He's like, the adult in the room.
Well, like he's the guy that
he's
has
adulting.
That I think
he's
like a boss.
Like a boss.
Mm-hmm. Like I think he's the guy that like is taking point on everything now because it's the only way like anything could get done, right? Yes. And I think like his idea is like as long as Trump does what he says and never contradicts him, like he will never contradict Trump for any of the stupid shit that he says.
Yeah.
So like he's now taking point on like I don't know. Their new obsession is the woman with the cowboy hat.
Yeah, this congresswoman who claims to have heard the call to the mother of the wife of the slain soldier and says that Trump was basically making fart noises into the phone. And now Kelly basically attacked her.
Baba Booey.
Kelly had a press conference and attacked her and essentially lied about something she'd said at a dedication of an FBI building that he'd attended years previously in her district in Florida. And the funny thing is that the press dipshits are all dropping their monocles into their martinis because I'm starting to think that General Kelly is not the honorable warrior that I thought that he was. I think he might actually be an apparatchik of this Trump administration.
Wait, you're saying that the guy who led war crimes in Baghdad and decreed and ran Gitmo and then voluntarily worked for Trump, you're saying he's not the generals from the West Wing?
But he's a 4-star Marine general. He's my dad.
I mean, the Honorable General Kelly, who started
the program of sending Marines to college classrooms to apprehend atheist professors. My General Kelly. He's a political operative. He's not above board.
It's astounding. And it really just goes to show that for these idiots, these guys who grabbed onto him as a symbol of stability when he was brought in as chief of staff and who now are so disappointed by his behavior. Looking at this fucking psychopath's track record, I mean, a guy who fucking ran Gitmo talking about how they're going to spread human rights to West Africa. It just goes to show that their objection to Trump, their objection to Trumpism is purely superficial, and that all they care about is presentation. Is if you look like the cool troops, you know, if you look like the serious generals from the West Wing, like you're talking about, then you get the benefit of the doubt until you're literally just lying on behalf of a sputtering, orange, senile maniac.
But, I mean, again, it goes back to this weird thing where, like, it does seem like there's this kind of, like, soft coup going on where it's just, like, the military...
Spot coup.
Where it just seem like the military guys are running everything and they're just letting Trump, you know, be dotter around.
Yeah, they're fucking letting him tweet and watch
TV. That's
what
he wants to do anyway.
It's true.
As long as no one calls him on it.
And I think that the weird thing now is, like, I don't know. I said that, like, there's this tension between people like Mattis and Kelly. Like, over the Iran issue is interesting to me because Trump has now not, like, they decertified Iran, but, like, basically they're not going to spike the deal. They're just going to extend it to Congress.
Well, decertifying makes the next move Congress's. They have to either move to reinstate sanctions or not. I mean, they have to move.
So it seems that, like, the actual generals, like the people in the Pentagon and in, like, Mattis or whatever, they actually want to keep the Iran, even though they don't like the Iran deal, they'd prefer to keep it in place because they know that if Congress just spikes the whole thing in general, like, that will isolate America diplomatically from the rest of the world if Iran decides to continue to abide by the terms of the the agreement with the five other countries that were involved in it.
Right. And this seems like it's the kind of thing that if they didn't really want the deal parameters to change, they would let him do, because this fucking Congress has passed nothing since taking office. There's a better bet. There's a good bet that if you send it to them, that they're going to dither on it or ignore it or fail to act. But then you can allow Trump to do what he wants to do, which is repudiate anything Obama did and feel like he's in charge by decertifying it.
Yeah,
you have to talk into the mic.
I thought
my mic was over there. It's over here. Well, I mean, the thing with it is that, of course, the Iran deal is very weirdly popular. I say weirdly because there's been the Iran derangement syndrome in American media and the blob for like 30 plus years of people just robotically repeating this line. Iran is the biggest exporter of terror in the world, even though that's not really true at all.
It was from the 70s. I mean, like,
you're from 79 on. Yeah.
And like, they've just never we've just never adjusted our idea based on this single event that I think most people don't even have like a conscious memory of.
Right. Everybody in the CIA, all the long termers, the CIA and Pentagon, in their wallet, they all have a picture of the Shah. And every night they look at it.
Well,
and a single tear goes down their eye.
They have a picture of the Shah, and they also have a picture of things that Hezbollah and Iran did to us in wars. Like when we occupied part of Lebanon and Hezbollah blew up all those Marines, which, like it or not, is something that happens when another country occupies a different country. Or when the CIA station chief, William Buckley, no relation, took the same route to work every day while he was backing up militias that were opposed to the South Lebanese Shia and got tortured and killed, which was a huge humiliation for the CIA. Or when we invaded Iran's neighbor and they, of course, funded militias that attacked U.S. troops that were occupying the country right next to them and destabilizing and fucking it up. So that, I mean, every time there's this, like, when it goes deeper than just robotically repeating that line, it's like, it's harmed Americans, but it's like, Americans who should have never fucking been there in the first place. They had way more of a right.
We always believe that, like, no one else is doing war fairly.
Right.
Like, anytime anyone fights back, we're like, no, that's not how you do it.
So you do 1v1 us. And it's like, it is. But the thing is, and you see this now that so many people are in favor of the Iran deal, The biggest fear of the Iran deal for people who wanted this continued animosity and wanted us to eventually have a military, direct military confrontation with Iran. The Iran deal is scary not because, you know, Iran's going to skirt it and get a nuke. It's scary because it shows that that spell doesn't work on people anymore. If you actually engage this country diplomatically, most sensible people are going to go like, oh, I like don't think we should have a war with this country. I don't think this is the most evil country on earth. And even if it was a direct military confrontation, isolation would be fucking stupid. I mean, look what happened with North Korea when we imposed harsher terms on them starting in the early 2000s. But the Congress thing does scare me. I mean, the narrative now is that there are sensible Republicans like Bob Corker, but every sensible person you can think of, they're like John Kelly. They've been doing every murderous act and are beholden to whatever lobbyist or whoever, whatever patrons in the national security state. And there is a likelihood that they could get pushed into helping spike this fucking thing.
And here's the funny thing. Like, all of the, like, the never Trump principled Republicans are all the people who want a war with Iran the most.
They're the ones who are happy that Trump did this.
Yeah. Like, Commentary Magazine or something was just like, hey, say what you will about Trump, he's right about Iran. He woke up the West, who has been too complacent about Iran for the last 30 years or whatever.
But the thing is we were talking about why they really hate Iran, and the reason they really hate Iran is because Iran has actually been able to critically undermine America's military strategy in places like the Middle East, and they're actually a threat to America's position. That in a way that Sunni states that export terror never will, because what they do only strengthens America's military position. 9/11, sending up some grade school educated kids to machine gun a bunch of people in a mall in Omaha or whatever, that only helps the American military's. Influence and power in the world. Iran is actually able to check it in some way.
The NATO, U.S., Israel, now GCC axis, they don't really see Sunni extremist groups as a direct threat to them. Otherwise, you know, Israel wouldn't be running both hospitals and training camps for, like, far, far extreme Salafi groups in Syria, especially in Golan Heights.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I guess the thing that might save us is just if these idiots actually sat down for a fucking minute and thought about what a war with Iran would actually go like.
Which we did think about.
And that's the thing, is we know what would happen, or at least we have a good guess because of the Millennium exercises that happened in 2000.
Explain what those are.
I think they're just watching 300 over and over again, and like, this is going to rule.
No, what were the Millennium exercises?
It was a series of war games in the Persian Gulf and in the Strait of Hormuz that simulated a war with what everyone kind of knew to be Iran, and the U.S. sent a bunch of ships into the Gulf and into the Strait of Hormuz, and the U.S. general who was charged with playing Iran basically decided to get creative. And instead of fighting them on the U.S. Army's terms, they fought them irregularly. Like, they sent out these explosive-packed boats, simulated, to attack the ships. And they ended up just wrecking this fleet that was supposed to just pound Iran into oblivion. And they actually stopped the game and then basically said, he's cheating. And then restarted the game with the parameters changed so that he couldn't do anything that was in any way unconventional, and then America won.
That there's a lot going on there. Yeah. That I think, yeah, like I said, like the idea, like, this is supposed to simulate like a real war, like what happened, like real war strategy, and then they were like, "I'm sorry, you can't cheat."
Yeah,
that is the American military industrial complex.
Yeah, it's perfect though, because we're back
perfectly.
It's time is a flat circle, because now we're the fucking redcoats marching through Lexington and Concord and getting shot from the tree line by guys hiding and going, that's not fair.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do that. Come out and stand in this line like we all are doing right here.
And back when the Iraq war was at, like, you know, its worst, and like, you know, Iraq was just, you know, a cauldron of violence. I mean, I guess a lot of it still is, yeah. But like, you know, like for instance, like during Fallujah or whatever, like I would hear a lot from like the war bloggers and like war pundits. They would be like, you know, the media keeps talking about how we're losing this war, but like, you know, every battle we engage in, you know, we're stacking up these jihadists like cordwood out back.
Just like Vietnam, baby.
Yeah, exactly. So like, they haven't learned anything. And man, oh man, like, if you thought the Iraq war was fun, wait till we fucking go to war against a country with like that isn't a complete basket case and has like an actual real
and
military.
Actual air defense systems. They have the S-400s. They have, the moment we actually engage with them in their waters, our ships are going to turn into fucking pressure cookers. What happens when they block off the Strait of Hormuz and suffocate global trade? What happens when, instead of just some fucking sexually repressed dumbass with a machine gun or a bomb that doesn't work, you have actual trained Quds Force guys that are committing terror acts in America to really hit at us?
Well, like, the scary thing when we were talking about this the other day is, like, the setup was, like, if you want to see, like, I know we're all, we like to joke about fascism and Emperor Trump or whatever, but if you want to see what, like, fascism and, like, a military dictatorship would really look like in this country, just imagine us losing this war we're going to fight.
That's when you get real fascism, is when your country's humiliated. Mm-hmm. And we would be humiliated. We would have tens, if not hundreds of thousands of Americans' bodies cooking fucking alive in ships that they turned into microwaves by hitting them. Troops getting fucking air-holed by IEDs and pot shots, getting ripped apart by SKSs.
Not to mention, like, what domestic things happened that put people in a state of panic.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine there would be huge opposition to any war. Yeah. There'd be massive protests against it. And, you know, like, the worse it got, like, you know, I would imagine local law enforcement would probably get a little antsy as well.
Oath keepers might decide to take the
they might
decide
to keep their oaths.
Yeah, they might. Yeah, they'd take the guns off of safety.
The only good thing that would happen would be the Proud Boys who sign up to fight against the IRGC. That would be kind of funny, though. Like, just a bunch of guys in Fred Perry polos who are like, we're going to go and venerate the housewife. And then just getting their throats
slit. They
would
become the humbled boys.
And just waves of Kekistani suicide troops waving that stupid fucking flag and clearing landmines with their bodies. Okay, actually, this sounds cool. Let's do it.
Yeah, we'd send them out like dogs to set
off. Oh, man. What if some of the Proud Boys switched allegiances because they're like, the Iranians also venerate the housewife.
I would like the idea of, like, you know, Trump actually, like, getting hands-on with the strategy. And, he's got to have one of those big boards with, like, you know, the sort of shuffle where you can move little, like, toys around the board and be like, you know, more battleships in there.
They would just give him one of those to play with, and then, like, but it would be like a Catan board.
If he did that enough, though, I think the military probably would kill him.
Yes.
They would probably assassinate him.
No, they would just set up like a play war room, and he wouldn't know about the real war room.
And they'd be like, they would just appoint Baron Trump as the new God Emperor of America.
Yeah, the Padishah Emperor.
Beautiful golden child.
Trump would, we talked about this, he would, like, the moment the first battleship gets fucking destroyed by speedboats, he'd be like, we need a bigger one. And just order the construction of the biggest one possible and then have it be constructed in Iran's territorial waters and send Zeppelins to guard it.
Just take the Trump Tower and just turn it into a boat. Just tip it on its side.
Sir, deploying martinis.
Yeah, push it off into the Atlantic and it immediately sinks. Yeah. But, I mean, obviously, we would take territory and all that stuff, but, I mean, we haven't won a single war in the 21st century. The idea, you know what, these countries that were either basket cases or incredibly crippled by sanctions, they still basically put us on unwinnable quagmires forever. But this, like, modern military, backed by relative popular support, in the population, we're gonna fucking take those guys, no problem.
It's not just us, though. You're forgetting. We're going to have the Saudi army backing us up.
They're just gonna, like, pull up in Maseratis.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I've told this story a million times about the Saudis who took chaise lounges to foxholes during the Six-Day War, and the Egyptians just told them to fuck off. They were like, you're literally adding
nothing.
You
cannot hang out with us. You cannot do war with us.
But no, it's like they're going to go there, and they're immediately going to infiltrate Tehran and find every Persian movie, beautiful movie star, and call her sweetie, and then break them psychologically.
General Brett Hawthorne is going behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
He's going to show them what a bear really does.
All right, so
a bear is hungry and angry.
So, in conclusion, anyone, just anyone, find Rex Tillerson's shoes, find Joseph Dunford's shoes, find Bob Corker's shoes. We got to stop this. We got to stop this.
Well, like I said, like if Congress completely spikes this deal, and there's a lot of people there who do, like there are psychos like Tom Cotton, but let's not forget there's a ton of people in the Democratic Party, like that Mark Penn op-ed we just read the other day, who was like, the Democrats need to get tough on Iran. They Iran doesn't like us, so we need to get tough with them for our president. There's a ton of people in the Democratic Party who are...
Well, they're crafty operators because they know that nothing is better for the fortunes of the Democratic Party than militarized hysteria.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe there are some things that are more important than politics.
Well, the thing that drives me insane is that the first round of new sanctions on Iran, the Democrats crafted this bill to put new sanctions on Russia, which, you know, I don't get the thought process, because they're like, they hacked our elections because of sanctions, so we need to give them more sanctions so they behave better. Which is just amazing. But to make it pass, the Republicans were like, well, we want sanctions on Iran. And so, like, no problem. But the entire point of the bill was to make Donald Trump look bad by not signing it. Mm-hmm. They were going to go, sir, you're a Russian plot. But he signed it. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. And then it worsened relations with Iran and helped.
It was not a good gambling chip.
Helped tank Obama's signature achievement.
And the funny thing is I mean, I don't pay too much attention to these idiots, but one of the big talking points in resistance right now is that he's apparently not implementing the sanctions against Russia that were passed as mm-hmm. part of this, which is even funnier. The idea of, we're going to get him in this, because, and it's like, yeah, I'll just sign it and not do anything. What
and
are you
no
do
one gives
it?
A
and
shit.
And no one cares. Yeah. Although that Jefferson, that Alexander Hamilton guy who did the tweet storm about how Las Vegas was a false
flag. Wait, is that the real Alexander Hamilton?
It was the real Alexander Hamilton speaking through a Ouija board. And he said that it was distraction from Russia, but specifically distraction from the fact that Trump isn't implementing the sanctions that were passed against Russia.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, because everyone was really paying attention and really gives a shit.
Yeah, because, you know, like, if you want to game American society, like, you know that you'd need some sort of, like, massive, incredible, like, spectacular massacre to make people forget about congressional sanctions that aren't being enforced.
Beyond the
fact... You could just literally wait a day and, like, anything would happen and people would
forget.
Show
them an old episode.
And also,
right.
At this point, really, people who want to call any mass shooting a false flag at this point are really just showing that they're living in the 20th century. Because so the Las Vegas shooting happened on October 1st, so it's 22 days later. 22 days after the Columbine shooting, the number one story in America was still the Columbine shooting. Who were these kids? What happened? How did this happen? That was still the number one story in America. The Las Vegas shooting was number one story in America for maybe 2 days. And that is the reality we're living in now, where the idea that you're going to distract anybody more than just the time moving forward and new things happening in this hyper reality of super stimulation and media overload is absurd. You don't need to distract people. They're already fucking distracted.
Yeah. The only way we talked about how everyone, the truth is every intelligence agency is fucking idiotic, but the Russians were the hyper canny operators that the resistance thinks they are. They would have funded the jumping of Lil B. Because I guarantee you that news cycle is going to last longer than this Las Vegas one. 100%.
Yeah, it's going to be memed at least.
Yeah.
Meg, yeah. Where are we at on time?
108.
Oh, okay.
We're going to probably cut like 10 of that, though, yeah. I think. Yeah.
All right, so anything else? Do you want to talk about Tom Perez, DNC, or do you want to wrap it up?
I'd like to talk about that.
Okay.
So, yeah, moving on from the Iran deal, and as I mentioned,
just to end that, when the war happens, we're on the side of Iran.
Oh yeah.
We will be moving to Tehran to be the only irony.
We will be basically the Axis Sallies of the Iran war. We're going to be broadcasting to U.S. troops, telling them to desert and kill their officers.
Yeah.
and and that the Mahdi will be revealing himself shortly.
I can't wait.
About that, but like Felix is like legitimately excited to do that.
Well, I just think Calm would be a fun city to do a live show in. The crowd seems amazing. Yeah, I just want a place where I'm finally respected.
The banning of alcohol obviously is no problem for you.
None for me.
What's their position on Kratom? Do you know?
We'll find out. I think the Shia Islam is a very literary tradition. I think they support K2. They support all the fake drugs.
Moving on from the Iran deal, and as I mentioned, it's not just the Republicans who want to rattle the saber on Iran. There's the Democrats, too. And just as the sort of an addendum to that, we mentioned it briefly on the last episode, but I think it warrants a little further discussion about this purge that just took place at the DNC this week, where Tom Perez fired 50, 60 people, or they let go all these longtime people who were, for the most part, like the Bernie part of the DNC.
Night of the Long Spoons.
And I think it's worth bringing up because I remember when the DNC election between Perez and Ellison was going on, the line that you heard over and over again was why are people getting so upset about this? Perez and Ellison are the same person.
Except for the fact that Ellison is Al-Qaeda sympathizing anti-Semite.
Well, that's what they said about him, right? And so now he's fulfilling his job. That's what he was put in. That's why they ran him in the first place. And he's fulfilling his job, which is to make sure that the people, for instance, that they put in positions of the financial committee are longtime anti $15 an hour activists. They're staffing everything with the corporate lobbyists and making sure all the superdelegates are their people and they're not the populist wing of the party.
And some people are very mad that Donna Brazile, who literally cheated on behalf of Hillary Clinton during the 2016 primary, is now in a position of influence in the DNC still, after that.
She literally cheated.
But when you have a talent like that, who is in charge of deciding where to allocate resources at the end of the 2016 campaign, you can't leave her on the bench. It's just a waste. How about this? We're fucked. The Democratic Party is hopeless. Purges. We're doomed. We live in geo hell.
Yep.
That's kind of all that I get out of it.
Check us out next month at the Brooklyn Podcast Fest. Tickets are sold out. Another no hope theme. You can't buy tickets now.
That's not true. The second show's tickets are still available.
Okay. Second show's tickets are still available. Let's have fun, guys. We're going to turn this around.
Virgil, how are the Jets doing? What's the score?
They're blowing it.
Oh, shut up.
Perfect.
Shut up. Yeah. We haven't been talking the last 40 minutes, and now you're coming with this weak garbage. Take his mic away.
Done.
We're going to have a serious discussion about your future.
They were up 14, and they're blowing it.
This isn't a sports podcast, Virgil, okay? Our fans
this is literally the opposite of a sports podcast.
We do have sports themes on the show when we talk about Chechnya wrestlers or some such.
He's got me there. All right. Before we end this week's show, I hope you all will indulge me for a second, and I would like to do a quick plug for a book that is coming out. A book from the Will Menaker collection. Folks, in the past, we've talked before about some of the other Will Menaker joints. Jacob Bacharach's two novels, The Bend of the World and The Doorposts of Your House and At Your Gates. We've talked about the new translation of The 20 Days of Turin. But I want to bring you another book that I think you guys will enjoy that comes courtesy of Will Menaker Productions. Bad Jobs and Poor Decisions by J.R. Helton. This is his, I suppose, novelistic/memoir. This is about sort of being down and out in Austin in the early 80s. It's very dirtbag. I think it's very up the alley of the listeners of this show. It is very funny, but it absolutely does deliver on the title Bad Jobs and Poor Decisions. Please look for that now out from Live Right. Anything else, guys?
Keep on keeping on, everybody. See you in Tehran.
All right, guys, till next time, just switch those shoes up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's our message we're leaving for people. Switch those shoes up.
Don't be afraid to take them off.
Yeah.
Bye.
See you, everybody.